I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Today I'm going to be going over my do not draft list, players at each position who I'm avoiding at all costs and why. Again, it's going to be mostly driven by analytics, and there are a few surprises, so stick around. I'll also spend time today on my second mock draft, how I fared, what went well, what didn't, what I noticed, and what I'll do next time. Let's get into it. The first player on my do not draft list is catcher Buster Posey from San Francisco. Some of the stats that I'm going to be throwing out here, you can find on Fangraphs. If you don't know what they are, I'm going to be going over them in the next few weeks. So just hang tight for now and trust me. So the reason I'm not drafting Buster Posey is because his hard contact rate is not good. It's 36%, which could be okay if his medium contact wasn't a lot more. His medium contact percent is 50, which means 50% of the balls he hits are okay. Another thing that's driving me away from him is his ground ball rate. He's hitting 50% of the balls that he makes contact with on the ground, which is not good. You want the ball in the air. If there's a ball in the air, it's more likely to be a hit than a ball on the ground. Some other negative stats for him, his strikeout percentage is 16%, which is up 5% from the season before, and his walk rate has gone down from the season before. Some other not so great stats, he's swinging at more pitches outside of the zone, and he's contacting less of them, and his swinging strike percentage is up from last year as well. To kind of summarize what I'm seeing, it's that he is losing a step, and you know, age is starting to get the best of him. I would rather have somebody like Carson Kelly or Omar Narvaez, who I see is similarly viewed in the fantasy community, on draft boards and rankings, but I think they're way more valuable to fantasy managers in terms of how the data says that they should do. The next player on my do not draft list is Yuli Gurriel from Houston. He grossly overperformed his metrics last year, and sure, he may have evolved as a hitter, but he may also be benefiting from cheating. You know, he played for Houston and they definitely cheated in 2017, and it's likely that they cheated in 18 and 19 too. His batting splits reflect why he may not be the hitter that he seems to be. He really struggles to hit lefties and has for his entire career. The last two seasons, he's had 15 total away home runs as opposed to 29 at home. I wonder why. Most outlets project him for about 20 home runs this year as opposed to the 30 he hit last year, and his advanced metrics reflect that. His hard contact rate is 38% last year as opposed to his medium contact rate, which is 43%. He's doing okay as far as not hitting a ton of the balls on the ground. He's putting them in the air, which is good. And, you know, he has a few other good qualities. His contact numbers have gone up each of the last 3 years, while his swing and miss rate has gone down. And yes, he could be benefiting from, you know, the natural evolution of a player, or he could be cheating. And I don't want to find out with him on my team. If you're in a deeper league, you know, he might end up being your starting first baseman, or he's going to be somebody's starting first baseman in a deeper league. Mine's a little more shallow, so he is probably going to end up as somebody's backup first baseman. But I don't want to end up with him on my team and him struggling because now the league is cracking down on the cheating. I would much rather pick up a player like CJ Cron, Michael Chavis, or Trey Mancini, and get players who definitely didn't cheat and whose metrics line up with their output. The next player on my do not draft list might be a little surprising. Second baseman Kevin Biggio from Toronto. This is a player with a lot of hype, but he scares me. He had a high BABIP last year, which means that he was getting lucky, but even so, he had a low batting average. He batted .234 last year. And I realize we're going on 1 year of data, but that 1 year isn't enough for me to rank him as high as some other people are. Some other not so great things. He had a 28% strikeout rate. That means nearly a third of the time he's at bat, he's striking out. The good sign is that he has a 16% walk rate. So if you're in an on-base percentage league, he could be valuable. He's a player whose hard contact rate is getting to be good, 39%. But again, his medium contact rate is almost 10% higher. So he's not hitting the ball hard most of the time. He has good line drive, ground ball, fly ball stats. He's hitting 40% of the balls he makes contact with are fly balls, which is good. You put the ball in the air, you have a higher chance of it being a home run or a good hit. And only 25% of the balls he makes contact with are on the ground. Some other things that I don't like, he's a lefty that hits into the shift 50% of the time. That's not good. Until he shows me he can, you know, go opposite field or at least up the middle, I want to stay away from him. He's swinging at 47% of pitches outside of the zone, and that's not good. It shows me that his discipline isn't there, and he's also not making contact with curveballs, sliders, and changeups, which comes with growth. Hopefully those things change, but he's somebody that I'm going to avoid this year and probably pick up next year. He's kind of a mix of good and bad qualities, and I really think it's going to be another year before he puts it together. So if I'm going to avoid him, I'd rather take Gavin Lux, Brandon Lau, or Michael Chavis, who I have in the same tier, but I see as players that are going to do better this year. The third baseman on my do not draft list is Yandy Diaz from Tampa Bay. He got a lot of hype last year from the fantasy community, but was injured some and generally, I think, underperformed what the expectations were. And now he is on Tampa Bay, which is a team that has a lot of depth and a lot of competition at first base and third base where Yandy Diaz plays. And even DH, if they wanted to put him there, there's a lot of competition for who's going to get those at-bats. So he's a player that hits the ball hard. His hard contact percent is 42%, and his medium contact is 40%. So he's hitting the ball hard, but he's not turning those hard hits into good hits. His line drive rate is 17%. His ground ball rate is 50%, and his fly ball rate is 32%, which means 50% of the balls he makes contact with are on the ground, and that's not something you want. His contact numbers all got worse last year compared to the year before. He swung at a higher percentage of pitches outside the zone than the year before and made contact on 10% fewer of those swings. And it was the same for pitches inside of the zone. Some other negatives, he took 12% more first pitch strikes than the year before, and his swinging strike percentage went up from 6% to 9%. And, you know, this could be potentially because he switched from Cleveland to Tampa Bay last year, and, you know, maybe they batted him in a different place in the lineup, maybe they changed his approach somehow, and you know, he didn't do as well because of that. So I don't like that. I don't like the crowded position battle. I don't like the swing and miss numbers, and I don't like the lack of power. I think there are some better options around the same time in the draft as him. Some players that you can get around the same time, like Scott Kingery or Hunter Dozier, who I think have a ton more upside. Another maybe surprising player showing up on my do not draft list is shortstop Elvin Andrews from Texas. If you need stolen bases, meaning you have no one else on your team with stolen bases, then consider drafting him. But he's a player I'm totally avoiding. He's had one really good season, and that's all. I don't like that he walks 5% of the time. I don't like that he's a career 275 hitter and people draft him and treat him like he's a career 300 hitter. But when you consider, you know, he's batting 275 with a lack of power stats, he's really a one category player, two at most. You know, he's changed something in his swing so that his hard contact percent has gone up the last few years. It was 38% last year, but again, he's a player who's got more medium contact than hard contact, and it's almost by 10%. He's another player whose ground ball rate is 50%, it was 51 last year, and he's got a low home run to fly ball rate. He's gotten worse every year on hitting nearly every type of pitch, which could be a sign that, you know, even though he's 31, he's starting to lose some of it. He's not able to keep up. But mostly, I just don't see him producing very much on a team that isn't very good. So at shortstop, there's a lot more complete players that are going to get you better stats across the board that won't go as early as Elvis Andrews. Look for Tim Anderson, Dansby Swanson, and Didi Gregorius instead. An outfielder that I'm avoiding this year is Andrew Benintendi from Boston, and it really pains me to give this one. I've drafted him the last 2 years. I even kept him 1 year, hoping the potential would play out, but it seems like he is what his stats suggest, an average player. He's reached 20 home runs, 20 steals once in 2017, but hasn't really done it again. Last year, his walk percentage went down from 10 to 9, and his strikeout percentage went up from 16 to 22%. His BABIP was actually better than the year before, so we know that his underperformance is not related to bad luck. It's related to bad contact or lack of contact. His hard contact rate is 38%, and his medium contact rate is 48%. So again, he's a player who is not producing hard hit balls. And so his line drive rate is 21%, his ground ball rate is 38%, and his fly ball rate is 40%, which is okay, but and it shows he's hitting the ball relatively hard, but he has too many balls that are not being hit for line drives, too many that are on the ground. He has decent contact percentages, but again, he's nothing special, and a lot of people are drafting him like he's special. And you know, he could be, but I think at this point it's safe to say, you know, you're getting an average player. So some guys that I would consider instead of Benintendi that you could get potentially even later than him, Victor Robles from Washington and Ramon Laureano from Oakland. The last player and perhaps the most surprising player on my do not draft list for this year is Blake Snell, the pitcher from Tampa Bay. The potential is there, but so is the potential for injury and the potential for being really erratic. He walks a lot of people. He had more than 3 walks per 9 innings last year, and he was the victim of some bad luck. He had a really high pitching BABIP, and his home run to fly ball rate was 15% last year, and the league average is usually around 11 or 12%. So when you see that, you can assume there's a spike in the ERA that may not reflect if, you know, he wasn't getting a little unlucky. There's two stats, FIP and XFIP, that said that he should have been closer to a mid three ERA pitcher. There's another interesting stat that I'll get into in a future podcast called Sierra, which reflects the same thing. Some things he didn't do well at. He didn't strand runners on base last year because he was giving up too many home runs and not getting enough grounders. He could turn out to be 2018 Blake Snell with a 1.89 ERA, but that year his BABIP was super low, which meant he was getting lucky that year. And his home run and fly ball rate was lower that year than the league average, which suggests he could have done worse than that year, as his FIP and XFIP suggest. He should have had a 2 or a 3 ERA that year. He's going too high for me. If he was my third pitcher that I was drafting, I'd be happy, but he's going to get drafted as somebody's ace, and it's too early for me to be interested. I'll wait for Chris Paddock or Eduardo Rodriguez. The last thing I want to go over today is my second mock draft. I went with a slightly different strategy this time, mainly out of necessity. I waited longer on pitching. After my keeper rounds, my first four rounds, my next three picks were batters. I went Chris Bryant, Josh Bell, and then Eddie Rosario. I'd be happy with the first two, but I'd ideally get Rosario a round or two later. I really wish I had picked a pitcher then and then chosen Rosario. I finished drafting outfield early, rounding it out with Michael Conforto and Ramon Laureano for a great balance of power and speed in my outfield. I would have kept Bellinger and Yelich as well. I also locked in all the rest of my starting batters early except catcher, picking up Muncy to play second base all in the first half of the draft. This mock, though, did not go my way for starting pitching. I like getting Luis Castillo around the 60th overall pick, but I went heavy on relievers because there weren't great starting options where my picks fell and I didn't want to reach. I ended up with Chapman, Hand, Will Smith, who I actually wouldn't pick today because it looks like Mark Melanson is closing in Atlanta. And Colome, along with some upside reliever picks, Hansel Robles and Giovanni Gallegos. My only other starter was Dinelson Lamet in San Diego. So I'd be hitting the waiver wire and streaming if this was a real draft for a real league. And sometimes, you know, you just have to roll with the punches. What I learned is that I can actually wait and get some decent relievers. I don't need to rush into it, but I may have to work a little harder to balance my pitching with hitting. So that's today's episode. Next week, I'm going to cover an important stat that I've been mentioning today called hard contact rate or hard contact percent, which is an awesome stat to look at when deciding who to pick up or let go and whose production to trust or not. Until then, thanks for listening.